So welcome back to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Rose, and today we have from North Wales, Catherine Jones. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Look, really excited to have you here today to talk about man trailing, especially, I appreciate that you're taking the time. I guess it's a little bit late there at night. So really excited to have you and talk all about man trailing, about your business. Spaniel's got heaps to talk about. So looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, super. We could talk about man trailing all day. So I won't keep me up to myself up too late. It's 10 p.m. here, so it's not too bad. But I've got a coffee in hand, so we should be good.
Fantastic. Cool. So, for the listeners out there, Catherine, can you just give us a little bit about your origin, who you are, what you do, or even how you got started in man trailing? Certainly happy to give as much as you want or as little as you want. That'll kick off our conversation.
Yeah, super. So my background's a bit varied. I seem to switch roles every couple of years. So I started off my dog training life, actually training security dogs and detection dogs. I did a degree in animal behaviour, decided that normal behaviour work wasn't for me at the time, and just went and worked with the worst of the worst. We had the police rejects because they were too nasty. We had the dogs that nobody wanted, the mad spaniels, and I was lucky enough to work with my mentor for 10 years, working with what would have been classed really in the UK as dangerous dogs, but we placed them in working rooms, and I had a weight of time. I wouldn't be where I am without him, and I had a great time. What happened when I started working away from him was people kept asking me for like behaviour advice, like, "Oh, my dog does this, my dog does that," and eventually I transitioned from security dogs because doing working nights and working with dangerous dogs all the time is quite draining, and I'm a horrible person on nights. So I decided I wanted a bit more stability, started to work back into behaviour, redo all the courses, get my knowledge up to it. And then I worked as a behaviourist, pretty much specialising in aggression when I lived in Lancashire. And then kind of COVID hit and I moved to North Wales. But transition between those is I saw man trailing appear locally with another instructor, went along to a session and absolutely fell in love. I took my spaniel at the time because she wasn't going to be a drugs dog. I wanted something fun to do with her that wasn't like my general training, and I wasn't the instructor. Did the course with Dawn Heaton at Preston Trick Dogs, absolutely loved it, and then couldn't get on her sessions, so I was like, I'll become an instructor. And then everything kind of snowballed from there. It's been the weirdest 4 years. I've gone from just being an instructor to becoming a head instructor for Man Trailing Global, to working alongside the company in the office. And then I stepped down from that role. I stepped down as head instructor. And I'm still teaching man trailing. I'm still using that method. I'm still having loads and loads of fun. But I'm focusing more on my business now as opposed to working like with lots and lots of different instructors. So it's But what I haven't managed to do is have more time to trail my dogs, which was the whole point of becoming an instructor. I call it the instructor's curse. You become an instructor and then you have no time to trail your own dogs. But in the meantime, I've managed to gain many, many dogs. So at the moment, I've got three Springer Spaniels who I do man trailing with, ranging from 7 years old to 10 months old. I have two German Shepherds, one of which is half asleep, can't be asked to do anything. And I have a behavior case who I actually do training dog wardens and other dog trainers with on aggression because he's part of a pound case and he's got history and he's a complex individual, but he's great for training people with because his aggression is very much under control. I have a Malinois Shepherd, and I've just gained for my sins a Malinois cross Labrador as an accidental breeding, who I didn't want, didn't need, but she's here and she is the most fun I've had in ages. She's like, I think she's 11 weeks now and she's all attitude. So yeah, at the moment I've got seven dogs. I have a 2.5 year old son and occasionally a long suffering partner who puts up with all my crap. So yeah, so I've been man trailing now for about 4.5 years, be 5 years in June. And the instructor course was the best thing I did in terms of my like progression as a trainer and like where I am now. I've got to work with so many amazing people because of the opportunities I had because of man trailing, because the community is so amazing. I've met people like across the globe. I wouldn't be speaking to you if it wasn't for man trailing. I've just been out to Guernsey, which is an island off England. I'm going to Ireland. I've had the opportunity to go to America. So I've had the opportunity, really lucky, to work with hundreds and hundreds of dog teams and instructors and just kind of like just pass on the addiction of man trading to so many people. I feel like it's like handing out drugs at a party. It's like, here, become a man addict. You're gonna love it, and it's much cheaper than drugs.
Or can be.
Well, depending, isn't it? So it's just been amazing. And like I'm saying, transitioning now, I'm doing a bit more online content. I'm working with a lot of teams across the UK. I'm doing a little bit of mentoring with some of the students that want a little bit of help that haven't got access to instructors really regularly. And I've just got to the point where my full-time job is man trailing, and I think that's just really weird and amazing as something that was supposed to be a little bit of side on my behavior business. I'll do two sessions a week. I work every weekend. I work 3 nights a week, and I work every Thursday doing man trailing alongside having a toddler and 2 maid dogs. So it's just been a really cool transition into something amazing, and it's because the community is so worldwide and global. Like, there's just always someone to speak to about it, and always somebody to kind of chat, evolve and stuff with, and be like, oh, have you seen this and you've seen that? And I also do now, I do some specialist man trailing with Spaniels, because Spaniels don't trail like other dogs. Spaniels have their own rules. And a lot of people man trail with Spaniels because it's a great outlet for them, but they're very difficult to trail with if you don't know what you're looking at, because they're completely off their tits half the time. And their life is sent way more than what we expect, and obviously they like to chase the odd bunnies and throw their handlers in bushes and things. So yeah, I've got three springers. I'm like, yeah, get another one.
Yeah, for
So
sure.
yeah, so
And
no,
that's
it's been
it's
a
been a bit
crazy
of
2 years.
yeah. It looks like it's been a, you know, it sounds like it's been a crazy ride. And I guess, you know, the whole purpose today, you know, to get you on the podcast and have a chat and just spread that, you know, that excitement, that knowledge. And you know, we're going to be very general today around our conversation. We talked about that, you know, obviously at later on we can potentially look at some deep dives around some subjects, but today I just wanted to, you know, get you on, introduce you to my audience, and you know, like I said, we'll talk about some spaniel stuff, and we'll talk about some general overview of man trailing. But it's certainly, since I've been doing some man trailing podcasts with a number of guests, the here in Australia and the you know, I guess the US, I've just had a number of inquiries flooding in for more and more content, you know. And I know that you know, we'd spoken, it might be 6 or 7 months ago approximately, you know, for the first time. And you know, you know, just talk about here in Australia, obviously we had you know, the Australian instructors course, where there's you know, three of us were there. And this year I believe the numbers are already, you know, easily tripled that, you know, like easily,
Oh, that's
for sure, with inquiries and things like that. So we're building a really good community here in Australia. And you know, we want to ensure that our education, our passion and things like that continue. And if I can bring on guests such as yourself and really share that addiction, and that education, I think there'll be lots of benefits, but also there'll be a ripple effects throughout other countries as well.
Yeah, that's what I've seen the last couple of years. It's like there's been such expansion in the UK. I think there's something like probably between 200 and 250 instructors across the UK. And then it's just kind of like rippled out from there. America's expanding, say Australia, there's a lot in Europe. And the sport of man trailing used to always be, oh, it's a search and rescue thing. We don't know what we're doing. It's nothing to do with us. Now it's becoming. You 10 years ago, if you said what agility was, people would be like, I don't know what you're on about. Something to do with jumping. Now they're like, oh yeah, it's dogs doing jumping things and the courses and stuff like that. Man trailing, I noticed in the last couple of years, like the first year with the Crufts, nobody knew what man trailing was. They thought it was like running with dogs canny cross. And we're like, no, there's no running. And now people are saying, like, oh yeah, I've heard of man trailing, my friend does it, or oh, I've seen man trailing. And it's becoming one of those sports that people just know what it is, which is really interesting, and it's really cool to see the change, not just in the UK, but because like you, I speak to a lot of international people, and I'm in lots of, you know, there's always lots of Facebook groups. I see the little addictions appearing in different places, and because it's such an emotive sport, because the dogs get addicted early, and the owners get really like into it quite early because there's huge successes. It's really emotive, and everybody just loves to go, no, you'll feel really good too. I say it's just passing on the drugs.
For sure. And it's interesting as
It's
well, like something that I in the last probably roughly 3 years, I've seen people they've come to me and they start to think about when they're acquiring a new dog or a new puppy, and they start to sort of think about, well, this puppy obviously be a great family dog, but I can do man trailing, but I can do nose works.
This is it. There's more than dogs. I don't think are just companions anymore. Dogs are like an extension of your hobbies. So you might go, oh yeah, I'm going to go and do yoga or something. But now they're going, oh, I could do yoga, but also I could do scent work, and that would give me the same buzz. And dogs are so included in not just our like let's go for a walk on a Saturday afternoon, but in our daily lives. And people are really thinking about how they can enrich their dogs' lives. They're not just like I used to call them ornaments. They're not just like a companion ornament. It's not something to have on show. They're like, no, my dog does this, and I go and do this because I enjoy it. And man trailing has such a huge social aspect to it, like because you get to see other people achieving things. There's loads and loads of cheerleading that goes on, and like, oh my God, your dog just did that. That's amazing. And even when you hide for somebody else's dog and it finds you're like the happiest person ever in a bush. Like you're hiding there. There's people walking past you, like nobody look in this bush. You won't see me. And your dog finds you, and you're happy. The dog's happy. The handler's happy. There's three people having an absolute ball there, and a dog that thinks it's great because there's some more cheese in the bush. And it's like this big happiness thing that goes on, and that's why I think people just love it. And you say it's an extension. The same with scent work. When the dog does something amazing, we all cheerlead them on now. And it doesn't really matter what sport you do. It's that happiness all the time. But yeah, dogs are really an extension of our kind of hobbies now. Like we do it for the dog, but really it's for us. We want the ribbons more than the dogs do.
For sure. So just going to circle back a little bit. So you thought you'd take up man trailing, just and add it as a slight addition to your behavior modification business. But I guess as you mentioned, over the last what 3 to 4 years, it's sort of taken over. Do I guess obviously you're passionate about it, but is there anything in particular that you think have thought about where that has contributed to that shift, or just that your passion and your experience?
So what I was doing with behavior, because I was working with loads of specialist dogs that had bite issues with people, dogs, they were difficult dogs. They were dogs that can't attend normal classes, but the owners wanted that socialness. The biggest thing that was stopping them, and they're hitting brick walls, was there was no social aspect. There was no they couldn't share their wins with anybody, but they also had no one to moan to, which I think is when you've got a dog with reactivity issues, you need to turn to somebody and go, my dog, I'm done. And I used to do a reactive dog club called TIRDS, which was some unpredictable reactive dog support. And we used to do some training on our dogs and eat cake. And that became an extension of that because it was something dogs could achieve. And it was something that they could have fun and the owners could revel in. But we weren't just doing the sitting and walking through town. It was like the dogs being amazing. And these owners suddenly going, oh, my dog isn't thick, or my dog can do something. And for the owners to see their dogs achieve something without them in a safe environment, we're working at night, there's nobody about, the dogs need to be muzzled, we can muzzle them. The trail layers needed to be working a certain way. It was really good. And that's what snowballed me into doing more man trailing, was just seeing the success in these dogs that just couldn't. They can't function necessarily in normal society, or they were going through behaviour plans to get to where they needed to be. But the owners needed support in a different way. They didn't just need me going, oh, your dog's really good. They really needed to see their dog being good, and man trailing facilitated that, which is just amazing. And then it snowballed into, well, I just really like doing man trailing, doing more man trailing. I had the opportunity to work very closely with lots of instructors. With man trailing global teaching instructor courses, and then I started to get asked to get workshops. So now I do probably half my income is doing workshops with and going to teach other students and with other instructors, and they host me, and we share the love across the UK and just have a whale of a time. Because people, they what's really great about man trailing, especially in the UK, but I think it's very much global as well, is that people are like, hey, I just want to learn, and I want to learn from you, and I want to learn from you, and I want to learn from you, and I want to know a bit about everything. And there's no like, you can't be friends with me. So I work with lots of different instructors to help them understand their clients more, because I have a very good background in behavior and work with aggressive dogs and reading body language. It's great for me to go and work with them and go, oh, did you spot this? Did you spot that? And we do lots of problem solving with them, which is absolutely brilliant. But yeah, that's where it just keeps evolving based on what kind of people are asking me to do and what my clients are doing. So half my normal regular clients are kind of reactive dogs, and the other half of my regular clients are just giddy, happy dogs that just need to do something with their brain, but their owners can't do obedience every Tuesday night, but they can come to man trailing twice a month and have a whale of a time.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, the beauty of that I discovered with scent, the scent sports or scent activities, having whether it be reactive dogs or, we had deaf dogs, and we've had a blind dog already. These are the types of dogs or people that are reaching out because they just don't know where to get some support or find a community, So that's what I love about this is that whether it be any form of reactivity or and obviously that also comes down to the instructor as well, here, right? where they want to, and but deaf dogs and blind dogs, it's just makes me all warm and fuzzy thinking about watching these dogs. That's enough of the warm and fuzzies, all right?
It is. It's that like instant gratification with them, especially dogs like that might be deaf or blind that people think they're handicapped. I have a deaf ridgeback, not sorry, a blind ridgeback that trails. Been blind since birth. The dog doesn't understand it's blind. It navigates the world beautifully, but man trailing, it's like the creme de la creme of man trailing dog because you can see exactly where the trail is because it follows it exactly. And the owners were like, oh well, he's a really nice dog. He's great, but we can't do sits and stuff like with him because he doesn't like luring doesn't it's a bit more difficult with him, and he's with some like really switched on owners. So they came man trailing and he's really really good. I have to hide the trail layer though, because not from the dog, but the handlers start aiming towards the trail layer. I'm like, no, stop helping the dog, he's really good, everyone needs help. I'm like, no he doesn't, he lives in the world of scent. He's much better than any other man trailing dog because that's all he knows is scent. There's no visual in him, but he trails. You wouldn't know he was blind at all, apart from he just orientates his head to one side when he's listening, and he's just really big on his gestures. He doesn't know. The same with like a deaf dog, apart from you need to use a few more hand signals because they can't hear you go trail, it doesn't matter. Or a three-legged dog, or a dog that's in a wheelchair, or a dog that has been kicked out of every dog training class because it barks all the time. Nobody cares in man trailing. I
For
don't
sure.
care if it barks, it doesn't
100%.
matter.
Or they have to go, 100 meters or 200 meters away from the rest of the, the 20 or 30 people, running, and they feel just, they feel like they're not making any progress, and that's where, one at a time, we're in the forest or we're in the bush here, and like I said, who cares that the dog's excessively barking at, or, not the most well behaved,
What's great as well is like, so even if your dog's like quote unquote not well behaved or hasn't got loads of training, it isn't like the man trailing helps with loads of things. It helps the dog settle in the vehicles, it helps them deal with frustration, it helps you work together. Like if you have got a dog that barks back of the car, once it's done a trail or two, it's so tired it's gone to sleep anyway. And they learn to settle in those environments where a normal class with 10 dogs would just be far too overstimulating for them, and they're just learning these weird habits. Whereas like man trailing, because it's so individual, and you can park the dog the car a little way, or you can have someone settle, you can do training in between. And I've seen dogs that like that's one of the reasons I love man trailing. Like my puppy, my 11 week old Malinois, Labrador, she is learning to settle in the vehicle at man trailing. There's people there all the time, so if she needs, anyone needs anything, they can go to her. But she's learning life going to man training sessions. So it's really cool the things that I can put in with her that doesn't it's not hard work. Whereas if I did loads of crate training, I'd have to hang around outside, it's hard work. People, it's so helpful.
For sure. I can't wait. I'll have to get you to send me a photo of your puppy or
Oh God.
Labrador Malinois mix.
At the moment, it looks like it's got a fat Labrador body, with a little Malinois head, and its ears don't know if they're going up or not. One's gone up, one's flat on its head.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, my Malinois Shepherd is very, she's very sharp. She's an extremely sharp dog. Mm-hmm. And she did warn the puppy several times. As I went to collect the puppy before she told it off, she'd already told it off, and she's just caught its ear, and the one is flopping. I'm like, no, have ears up or ears down.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. Yeah. It doesn't know what it's going to be. Like sometimes it's a Labrador and it walks around nice and calm, and then you see the Malinois kick in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, look, there goes the Malinois. So she's not anything I wanted, and she's not by any means has anyone spread this on purpose. This is an accident, and I took it on because I'm like, where else is this supposed to go? It's got to be with someone like now, and I don't like the breed. I think they're really hard in a pack.
yeah, for sure. It's certainly an interesting mix. Like I said, it was obviously accidental, but you know, the puppies will, you know, they'll be you know, as always, fantastic, and I'm sure that we'll see the man trailing journey of, what's the puppy's name again, sorry?
Oh yeah. If everyone says you're Labrador and you just think you're Labrador, you identify as only Labrador, we'll be all right.
Cool. Let's move on. You know, so we've just identified that you know, man trailing is, you know, all inclusive for all breeds, reactive dogs, etc. You currently run instructor education, and then you have your local group of man trailers. That, and you said that's a number of times a week.
Yeah, so what it is that I work locally, so just have a group of about 30 people I work with locally, like an hour from where I live, and then I'm hosted by instructors to do workshops for them, and they kind of like follow around and learn a little bit. So it's not like aimed at instructors. Anyone can host me for anything. Like I've just been over to Guernsey to do like introductions for those guys over there.
Yep.
But I'm just very lucky that the instructors still want to, you know, do some work with me in bits and bobs. But yeah, it's not specifically aimed at kind of working with instructors. I just end up working with a few because they're just they're a really cool bunch over here. I love them. And they're always on about like upping their education, which means I need to keep up my education. Like I'm doing loads of courses at the moment, so I can be ahead of the game. But so I travel quite a bit, but I'm also lucky enough to do a lot of evenings here in my local area in North Wales, which is quite nice as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So I wanted to start a little bit. I know that you know, you talked about spaniels. You've got three spaniels, and you know, I wanted to sort of just jump off this, you know, to have a chat a little bit about that further. You know, so understanding spaniels, obviously, and how you sort of, I know that you do a lot of education for spaniel owners around that, and as you mentioned earlier, you know, they trail a little bit different compared to some of the other dogs, and you know, for me, you know, I'd love to have that conversation around that. But you know, I've got a German short-haired pointer, and he came to me later on in life, and he is, let's just say, for me at times frustrating. You know, let's just say that. You know, then I watch all my friends with German Shepherds or Malinois, and I'm like, grr.
This is the thing I have, because like I've got the Guardian breeds, and I've got my independent gun dog breeds. And so me and actually another instructor, Jolene Carter at Carter's Pet Services, we started to notice that really early on that people, spaniels are really, really good at man training, like extremely good. And all the gun dogs are, because they live in a world of scent. They're so efficient with scent. Mm-hmm. But we want them to do stuff in straight lines. We want them to go A to B and get there. And the dogs can't, they're not genetically wired to do that. They go A to Z because they want to check everything en route. Mm-hmm. So we started doing some education online webinars. I do like an online Patreon that touches on spaniel stuff and other bits and bobs. Mm-hmm. So we started to do education online because there was a lot of, I think, misconceptions. And because a lot of the man training knowledge out there is based on police who are using Malinois, Shepherds, or they're using bloodhounds, which bloodhounds want to follow scent. Like the hound breeds just know how to follow scent. German Shepherds, Malinois, Guardian breeds go, how can I please you? What can I do for you? I wouldn't like to get it wrong. Oh my goodness. And they're like, help, please, please tell me I'm a good boy. And I just want you to say that, whereas the spaniel's gone, yeah, I don't give a shit, middle fingers have gone up, I'm gone.
Yep.
And they're just, they don't work to please you, they work because they want to do something, and they work because they're happy doing something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's We know they're driving. We know they want to extend. And some people are like, yeah, I've set a trailer out and the dog was really struggling because it was, we did loads of intensity and the dog didn't get it right or it mucked about on the trail. But you make the trail really hard and suddenly the dog gets it. Spaniels don't do being babied. They don't suffer fools gladly either. They're like, if you're being thick behind me, I'm done. I'm gone. I don't need you. Get lost. Because we bred them to work away from us. The same with like the HPRs and the retrieving breeds. We bred them to have enough brain power to think in the situation and just do what needs to be done. And that includes man trailing, which might mean cutting a corner and going through a bush. It might mean looking at you like you're an idiot because you're taking forever to come with them. And they're very fast. And the faster they go, the worse they are at man trailing because they just start losing their head. If they're running, they're not thinking. So we do lots of stuff like educating spaniel owners on just how to kind of look at their spaniel and not get frustrated by the fact that it's too fast. And I always say to people with spaniels, I was like, look, spaniels know what they're doing, you don't, and you've got to catch up. But by the time you've caught up, that spaniel's gone to the next level. So you're just always paying like a little bit of catch up with them. And like, I love my spaniel. So my oldest, she's super easy. She's like the easiest spaniel in the world. She's the one that lulls everybody into thinking spaniels are great. And I'm like, no, don't look at her. Look at the other two. My male captain. So he was born just after lockdown, and we had it here in the UK with COVID. And I'm not about training as a detection dog, but the detection dog kind of jobs disappeared overnight because there was no festivals, there was no social activity. So I did man training with him, and he is shit hot. He is fast. He is amazing. He's so accurate when he wants to be. But equally, mid trail, he'll decide to cut a corner. He's like, "Yep, the person's over there. I'm not following the trail. I'm just going to shift." It took me probably 6 months to be able to read that change in behavior because the emotional state for him is the same. Whether he's on the trail or cutting a corner, trying to throw himself at trail layer from 100 meter distance, all he's seeing in his brain is like, if I get to the person, I get my tuggy toy, the world is amazing, I am awesome. And the behavior doesn't change. Like, he doesn't go, oh, I've left the trail, I'm going to the trail layer and I'm gonna cut corners, or I'm gonna do things in a very difficult spaniel way that involves mum going through prickly bushes. His emotional state's the same, so his behavior doesn't change. And that's what we're reading all the time, man trailing. We're not, the dogs don't give behavior to us because they're like, oh, mum's following me, I need to turn to the right to tell her the trail goes to the right. They're thinking, and we're just bumbling along behind them. So his emotional state didn't change. So I had to work really hard on slowing him down to the point where I could just see the subtle changes in him, which with him was literally, he'd head like flick in the direction, his head would flick in the direction of the trail layer, come back to the trail, he'd flick again, and I knew damn well he was about to cut across on air scent, which isn't a problem, but it is a problem at 200 meters or 100 meters away and cutting across bloody gorse or whatever. So I learned a lot through him because he's extremely fast, he's extremely strong, and his decisions are quick. So I spent a lot of time slowing him down. I've got my third springer now, which is Jin. She's 10 months old, and I've taken a different track with her. So I very quickly got rid of the tensity with her because I mean, Captain's fast and he's very high drive. Jin is like Captain on crack cocaine and LSD. She's a different level altogether. And actually, she's so much faster than I am. I thought I was fast. I'm not fast. Like, her behaviors are so quick. So we're working with her on really like putting lots of thought processes in the trail. So it don't have to be long, but lots of like junctions and thinky bits so that I can read her. And this is what I'm working with a lot of spaniel owners. It's like, it's not about harder, stronger, longer. We don't want to put a 300-mile trail out and try and knacker the dog on distance because it doesn't matter. It's a spaniel. It could run all day and outlap you 50 times. But if I put a short trail out with loads of turns, loads of complications, lots of things the dogs has to work out, like road crossings or contaminated areas where there's scent pools, those dogs work a lot better, and in a way that the owners can go, oh my God, I can see that. Ah, that makes sense to me. And I always think man trailing is a bit like learning to drive a car. So the first time you get in a car, trying to change the gears, put your clutch on the foot on the put your foot on the clutch and change gears without crashing is like the scariest thing in the world. And then you start to do things automatically. Then you start to be able to turn without thinking, and you check your blind spots, and you do all these things without thinking. We all drive now, and you go, oh, that person over there, I can tell they're going to cut me across, or you just know stuff's going to happen. And that's the same with man trailing. You learn the pressure on the line, you learn the head flicks, you learn the head lifts, you learn the tail carriage. But you have to focus on one thing at a time. And because spaniels are so fast, and you have to like ski behind them all the time, you don't get a chance to look at all like just ahead, because the head disappeared in the bush, the tail's doing this, long line's gone around the tree, you've fallen over, the dog's looking at you like you're an idiot. And yeah, you're just like, ah, the whole time. And I'm like, just everybody slow down. So it's trying to learn all those little things at a time. So I do lots and lots of video analysis. I've tried and film all my trails that I work with people with, and I send the video and I go, look back at the video, watch it once for the whole video, watch it second time for you as a handler, and the third time for the dog, and just try and notice one thing that fits in your head. Now, whether that's, oh, when that dog took a junction, I saw its head carriage change. Maybe I need to start for its head, and just trying to slow it down with videos and have a look at your spaniel without dying behind your spaniel, because it's such hard work. And I think it's the same for any of the gun dog breeds. They're so efficient and they're so good, and they think we are so thick. They just think we're so stupid behind them that they just kind of like, yeah, you don't know what you're doing, so I'll just carry the team for you. And you're like, no, I do know what I'm doing. Just do it a bit slower, please.
For sure. I'd
Please.
say something. So, Noah, before we started our man trailing journey, we did a lot of Canny Cross.
Oh,
And I've had a number of people with German short-haired pointers come to me that have dabbled in Canny Cross or bike draw, and the dog's like, harness on, let's go.
Speed, only speed.
For sure. And then as you mentioned, some of those innate behaviors come in, and they start doing circles and think they're flushing, and then 10 meter lead, it goes, it's chaos.
This is it. You just, I always think when you've got a fast dog and a strong dog and a very, very good dog, it's always the good dogs, you just feel like you're like a kite on a string behind these dogs, because you're not able to process stuff because everything's going so quickly, which is, it makes some really good man trailing dogs. You just have to catch up at some point, and there's no point stressing about it. There's no point getting upset about it. At some point, you'll catch up, and
And
as long as you keep working on it.
for sure, and something that you mentioned earlier, it's not always about like, I know that we have a system that we generally we follow in regards to our start preparations and things like that, but very sometimes some dogs just need a we need to, rather than go ABC, we just need to take a slight step to the side and go, hey, maybe we just ease off on those intensities, as you mentioned, or the threshold's too high at the start and the arousal's too high. Let's just take a few steps back,
Absolutely, because it's because that's the great thing about man trailing. It's very adaptive to the dog in front of you. And there's some dogs that I've, put inside, I'm like, I think maybe we're pushing this dog on too fast, but I'm gonna try this and see how it works. And oh my God, it's the best thing for the dog. But in my brain, I'm like, this dog shouldn't be able to do it this well. Like, it's done like a couple of sessions and it shouldn't be at this stage. But they just get it, because we underestimate what that dog values. And if that dog really values finding a person in the bush for cheese, they don't need to be babied into it. And because, like with the man training global method, there's obviously that intensity afterwards, so we've always got that lovely little win. So if the starts are a bit hard and trail becomes a bit difficult, and we kind of go, oh bugger, we've just pushed this dog on a little bit more, the dog finishes on a high, it finishes on fun. It doesn't go back in the car and go, oh, that was not worth it, the cheese isn't worth it anymore. They go, you know what, that was hard, but I had my little won't. I always call it like the cake at the end of the trail or the donut. I'm like, it's just that little bit of a so it will help work past some of those issues if the dog's been pushed on a little bit. But equally, if you haven't done, like the trail's been a bit easy for that dog, you can always adapt things to the next trail. You can go, okay, I know this was too easy, so I'm going to add a little bit of this in, a little bit of that in. And what's complex on a trail is very individual to each dog. So Captain My Springer finds road crossings and having to wait for things very, very annoying. And he gets really frustrated and he looks at me like I'm an idiot. And he's like, why are we waiting to cross the road? I can outrun that car. Don't worry about it. You're so slow. You get killed, I don't care. And he just wants to go at 100 miles an hour. So like practicing just stopping at roads and bits and bobs, just complexities, because he has to deal with the frustration. And that really makes him think, and that makes him calm down the trail. Whereas other dogs are like, yeah, I know how to stop at a road. Who cares? It wouldn't be a complex thing for them to do because they're just sensible, normal dogs.
For sure. And something that you mentioned earlier, which sort of really, you know, I wanted to just come back to is, you know, this mindset of, you know, we don't have to make the trail longer and we don't have to make it, you know, aged, you know, longer as well. You know, we can add those complexes, as you mentioned, into it. You know, they can be shorter trails, but have, you know, have more junctions and, you know, more turns to get the desired outcome, right?
Yeah. So complexities, it's in our brains, the longer it is, the more aged it is, the harder that trail is. And actually, most dogs don't bother with age. Unless you go over 6 or 7 hours, what I've seen most pet sports dogs, I can't speak of operational dogs, is that once it's been settled on the ground for an hour, it's so much easier for them to follow. Whereas if you put turns and road crossings and things like for spaniels, like animals on the trail, like going past birds or animals, is like that's more complex for them than just running a really, really long trail, because they can do length, they can do running around like a headless chicken, but they can't use their brain sometime.
Yeah, when Ree came over to Australia, I'm like, just be mindful that we may see some kangaroos.
It's such a different world out there, isn't it? That like I'm like, oh, worried about a squirrel or something, and there's like a kangaroo, something quite a bit bigger and a bit scarier than you guys.
For sure, I'm like, it's okay. We'll just they'll see us and run. But you know, some of them are 6 foot tall, right? Adding in those distraction elements, you know, can add another element of complexity to you know, to the trail for sure.
Absolutely, it makes a huge difference. And little things like, you know, you can add complexity with the start of the trail by making the scent article a transfer scent, so something that somebody's touched, or put the scent article up high, or things like handshakes with somebody. The trail layer does a handshake with somebody, the person is left behind, they become the scent article, and the dog's got to take the scent off that person's hand. It's a bit gimmicky, it's a bit of fun, it's fun, but you watch those spaniels go sniff the hand and go, but you're stood here, so you're not the trail layer. Hold on a minute. They have a little moment to process the scent in the brain, like a little computer, and then they go, oh, the person's that way. And just having a start where they have to use their brain for 10 seconds as opposed to just launching off really, really does make the spaniels go, oh, this is fun. So that makes a big difference as well.
For sure. For sure. I think, you know, I think the possibilities are endless, right? And I think also that, you know, it's a matter of with particular dogs, whether it be spaniels, GSPs, gun dogs, etc., thinking outside the box a little bit at times.
Yeah, they certainly don't fit any sort of normal mold, do they? The older certain breeds, you look at them and you go, no, you're not in the box, you're not even near the box.
You're way over there.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing I took from training detection dogs and security dogs, because these dogs were dogs that came that didn't fit in the box. They weren't easy pets, or they'd done training classes, and they were people that were wits end. They'd quote unquote tried everything. And we take them on and we go, okay, you know, let's see what is there. And it didn't mean doing the stuff that everybody else did. It meant looking outside the box and what worked for that dog, and what was a reward that actually worked for. Like, some of the best rewards for dogs we had weren't tennis balls. It was like wrapped up tea towels, or like towels, like little small face towels that we rolled up and put a little bit of cheese in them. And that was like the best toy for the dog. Okay. And nobody put that in a normal class, but everybody thought tennis balls, these dogs wouldn't play with tennis balls. It was so interesting. To look outside the box. And we can do the same thing with man trailing. There's a couple of teams I've worked with that the reward for the dog at the end of the trail is to blow bubbles. They have like the little bacon flavored dog
Yeah,
bubbles.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And honestly, the dog's like, blow the bubbles. And it just like backflips. It's such an excited little spaniel because that's what it wants. Another dog that I'd seen, it might actually been one of Rhiannon's clients. I think it was like a Shiba Inu or something. It was something like that. And it, at the end of the trail, you had to make sure there were some twigs or something because it needed to select the right twig.
Yes, she did tell us about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was Rhiannon that said it. It needed the right, it needed to find a prize at the end of the trail. So you had to keep, if you do any urban, obviously, you have to take a few twigs with you, hide in a bush with some cheese and some twigs. You just look even weirder. I've seen another one that likes kicking up leaves, so kicking up bits of grass and leaves. So both all my spaniels are really like tuggy toy orientated because you can tell I've worked with Malinois and things. So they like, they love nothing better than being proper like ragged around on a tuggy like a Malinois. I'm like, give them a good old like drag around, they love it. Whereas some other dogs wouldn't dream of like being dragged around, but they want to carry their toy. So it's just so nice that you can look at a dog and work with that dog and go, what's your reward? Okay, your reward is this.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, it's one of those things where we need to understand our dog and you know, get to know what really reinforces them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I think pet owners these days kind of have trouble with is that there's an expectation that a dog should do something in a certain way. So they should be rewarded by bits of chicken because that's what everybody uses with training. But with man trailing, because we're looking at the dog's prey drive, we're looking at how they work, it might not, they might, bits of chicken at the end is not enough. So let's have a look. Can we use something else? So can we use a different kind of food? Can we use a toy? Can we use how the trail layer acts? Like, do they need just somebody to tell them they're awesome? And people look at that and go, oh, I can use chicken for training, but I might get like 10% out of the dog. But if I run around like a headless chicken, have a party, dance with the dog and bounce around at the end of the trail and my dog gives me 110% then because what they needed actually was whatever tailored to that dog. You know, it doesn't matter what it is per se, as long as the dog wants it. And I think as pet owners, sometimes we can be a little bit lazy because it's just easier to use chicken.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I also, you know, while you mentioned it just now, I'm always, you know, talking about it, the importance of trail layers and education for trail layers, right?
Oh, trail layers. We have to have trail layers, but sometimes basic directions do not exist. But to be fair, I'm awful. I'm like, you see that tree? And they're like, yeah, I see that tree. I'm like, get to that tree, turn left. Turns out we were looking at different trees and they're somewhere else. At times I'm like, do you see that really green tree with the branches? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, God, I need better descriptions. Trail layers, like half the fun of man training is being able to hide for a dog and being that dog's reward. Like there's nothing better than sitting in a bush or sitting on a bench somewhere in town. And a dog's like, I found you. I'm coming for you. And you're like, yes, you found me. And this dog comes like barreling in. It's like, give me my cheese. Give me my love.
Yep.
And trail layers need to be exciting, isn't you? If you're boring and you're not interested in being jumped all over by a dog, you need to pick a different sport. No, it's because you know, at the end of the day, the dog gets to the end of it and you just hand it a block of cheese. I always talk about cheese, but you hand it a bit of something, you go, oh, thanks for finding me. That dog's like, this was not worth the effort. If you go, oh my god, I was so lost without you, I wouldn't know what I'd do. The dog goes, oh, thank God I found you. You'd just be so lost without me, wouldn't you? And you need the dogs. I always think the dogs think we're thick. Every Thursday evening, the same people go missing. And they must go, why the hell did you let them out? they love it. But yeah, the trail layer is so important. There's so many little things in man trailing. It's not just a dog taking scent and finding somebody. It's finding somebody they want to find. It's somebody who can understand directions as well and not get lost consistently. The trail layer has to understand dog body language because sometimes you need to adapt. If a dog comes in and it's really excited and actually that excitement's caused it to be really over-aroused, it's probably not a good idea to try and touch that dog at that point when you're giving it food, you're giving it something of higher value. You're like, oh, yeah, got to put your hand on its head. And dog's like, whoa, I am so overstimulated right now. Because it can be, it could become a risk with the wrong dog in the wrong situation. Because you don't know what's triggered that dog during the day, and you know, high arousal's kicked in, and you know, so the trail layer's got to be able to read the dog and go, this dog's, I'm just going to feed it, and it's looking a bit fizzy. So I might have a little game of tug with it, but I'm not going to be like give it kisses and things. And it's important that they also learn to take a little bit of direction from the handler and instructor. I did have an issue once, a couple of trail layers that were like, yeah, I know dogs, I'm fine. This dog will be fine with me. And I'm like, no, you need to listen to what I'm saying here, because if you do something wrong, you frighten this dog or you upset this dog by being too over the top, you're going to set it backwards in its progression. You're going to frighten it.
Sure.
So yeah, they're important.
And I think, as a group, when we get together, for that weekly session, I think that it brings us all together as a community, really, when, we all lay trails for each other's dogs, and we see dogs progressing, they progress really well, and I think it really contributes to that, we, our community, that we are all doing it together.
Absolutely. I think there's a it's really nice to meet up in the evenings or a day or whatever you're trailing and just meet up with people and be like, oh, how's your week been and how's your dog doing? And oh my God, last week they did a really good trail with this. Let's do this in order to gain that success. And you get really invested in everybody else's success as well. You because you want everybody to just be awesome and have fun. It's really good. So it makes a huge difference in the situation. And I think it becomes like this, it does become a massive community.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'm looking forward to more instructors around Australia and Queensland as well, later on this year, coming on board and building what we've already sort of spent the last sort of 8 to 9 months establishing. So yeah, super, it's definitely super exciting times around the world for man trailing, but especially here in Australia as well.
It's just amazing how far it's kind of traveled, and it is that community. It's one of the things that someone said to me once, it's collaboration, not competition. You get to work with other instructors and have fun because you want to progress your own dog, so you want to work with those people so you can lay trails out together, and same with your students. And it's all about everybody having fun. There's no like, oh well, my dog's better than yours, because nobody thinks like that. Everybody goes, oh, your dog did a really cool trail right now, my dog did a really cool trail. And those trails won't look the same. They might be completely different looking, but everybody achieves something. Whereas in the standard class, if six dogs are sitting and the seventh dog won't sit, or it's having a tough day and it's not focusing, or it's seen a squirrel or whatever, and the owner goes, well, they're all doing that and I'm not doing this, even though there's loads of reasons why your dog isn't doing it, it doesn't matter. It's not the end of the world. It becomes the end of the world to that person, because it's really easy to compare as like something that's quite black and white, whereas man trailing so like all the colors of the rainbow. There's no black and white in man trailing. It means that you can look at your dog and go, my dog did this cool thing, that dog did that cool thing, and we all had a happy time together cheerleading each other on, which is just what I love the most about it. And it you know say it's national, it's international now. Like I can't believe that this people in Australia like doing man trailing, doing the same thing I'm doing in the same way. So literally, I could fly to Australia with my dog and know that I would be taught in the same way that I would be taught over here, which is really cool. And even though it's a different environment, and you have kind of we can trail all year round, I suppose you guys when it's too hot, or if it's too many things that might
Bite.
bite you, or get killed by
The
a kangaroo. It's different kind of health and safety situations
For
going on.
sure, we're currently here, currently as we speak, we're heading towards the end of summer. There's a lot of venomous snakes and stuff like that. So a few of us have, we took a break, or we've done some, we've transitioned a little bit to a more urban environment, and obviously late at night or early in the morning as well. So I know that a couple of the other guys have continued, but once again, they're super early in the morning or late at night, and that obviously adds another element and to to the whole sort of scenario as well. But winter here is going to be where obviously where it's at. We're going to be have our busiest times, but there's certainly we can still continue throughout summer. We just need to be a little smarter about things.
Yeah, and it's the same, like we have the opposite problem in winter. Like we have to consider like if it's too icy, it's too cold and wet, is it too windy? We've had a lot of named storms recently where the winds are 40 mile an hour. We can't trail in that. Like the dog might be brilliant, but it ain't trailing 40 mile an hour winds because the scent is gone. And there's no trail left. So It's really interesting to see the difficulties. And say we went to the USA, I was lucky enough to work in Texas. We went in November when it should be like not too hot and not too many animals. And it wasn't hot. It was, I didn't bring a coat because I didn't think it'd be cold, and it was cold. But like we have things like snakes and wild boar. Absolutely not a consideration here in the UK. My consideration is, if the spaniel sees a squirrel, is it going to pull its owner over? And oh God, don't throw yourself under that car. Like that's the biggest worries we have, is more like it's very small compared to what you guys have. There's no like necessarily hospitalization if something's bitten somebody.
No, for sure. And we're certainly the safety aspect is we brief that out quite a lot, but also from a business point of view, we've got to be right across that for sure.
But it's
So I
really
just wanted
cool.
to also sort of wrap things up a little bit. So what do you got planned for the next little while in the world of Catherine and trailing canines?
Oh my goodness. So at the moment I'm here and everywhere. Someone said to me yesterday, she was like, how do you do everything? And I went, badly. I was like, how do you progress it all? I was like, no, I just have to put everything in categories, and we do a little bit every day. So what I'm doing now is and is process processing is stepping into like a little bit online content. So I do a bit on Patreon, we do like monthly webinars to try and spread a bit more stuff online man trailing, because man trailing is so practical and you need to get out and do it. But like we have enough problem trying to get information over here in person, because like jobs and traveling, and not every dog wants to do a full day mucking around. So I started doing a bits and bobs online. I'm getting some guest speakers into bits and bobs that, and just starting to spread a bit of man training knowledge. It's very much based on my experience and my opinions, and it's and lots of conversations about what would work for that dog and these situations. So I'm doing a little bit online, which I just find absolutely m amazing that I'm at the point where I'm like, oh, I'm speaking to people who are across the world, and I don't even know it. Like I don't know who's like these are people I'm never going to meet, which is really interesting. I'm doing a lot more workshops in person. I'm doing what I call man training mastery workshops, which are like 3 days where we break down certain aspects of man training. So we talk a lot about casting, and we go and do exercises to help with that. We go and do scent discrimination exercises and really get the dogs understanding fresh versus old, and breaking stuff down. So doing three of those in the UK. And then I've just started making man training equipment, so long lines and things as well, because I haven't got anything else to do in my life apparently. I couldn't find long lines that I wanted. So I was like, right, because I kept basically Captain breaks everything. If I want to test something, I use Captain, my Springer, and he kept ripping all the rubber off long lines. So we started making some long lines, and yeah, so just I'm just doing loads and loads of man trailing, basically. I mean, that's my whole world at the moment, is just man trailing and then some. And I just get another dog every now and then because I've nothing, clearly I don't need any more stress in my life. So yeah, we're capped at seven dogs currently. I don't know if that will change, but we'll see. But yeah, it's just really cool where I'm transitioning into just having an awesome time. I'm doing a little bit of like some tracking and learning about scent work things, and kind of coming back to my roots a little bit more with because I did it all with the detection dogs and security dogs. It's like I'm coming back round to that a little bit, and trying to find things that will enhance what I know and what I can get people to learn, and to help their man trailing as well. Because because it's such a new sport, and a lot of stuff is kind of based off well, 90% of it's based off the operational guys, where their training is different. Like it's different. I'm hiding somebody in the bush. I know where they are. I'm not looking for a missing person on a hillside in minus whatever in torrential rain. So looking at a lot of their methods and having a lot of fun, because they know their shit. We just cause trouble in middle of town on a Saturday evening.
That's exactly right. Awesome. So, where can people, if they, they like what they've heard today, and they go, "Oh, Catherine, she sounds like my sort of lady." Where online can they reach out to you?
So Facebook's always the one, isn't it? I think Facebook's both active. So there's Trailing Canines on Facebook. And then if you go on my website, which is trailingcanines.com, that links you over to where my Patreon is, where my online bits and bobs are, my newsletter. And then I also have a Facebook group called Talking Trailing. It's got a picture of a dachshund on it, where I do like monthly free lives in there, where I just talk on a topic to do with man trailing, whether it's do motivation or handler stuff, and just kind of I'm trying to give out as much information as possible out there, just because just to help people, and maybe people may make people think about something, so think about a different way to do things, or maybe adapting themselves to help them have success with their dogs. So yeah, I'm Facebook's usually the best place to find stuff, isn't it, these days? Because everybody's on it.
No, no, for sure.
Social media rules our lives.
100%. So, thank you very much, Catherine,
Thank
for
you.
taking the time to talk to me today, and help educate not just us Aussies, but people around the world that will listen to the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. I really appreciate, as I mentioned earlier, you taking the time. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And it's love. I can't believe that I'm speaking to somebody in Australia talking about man trailing. It's just blown my head. So thank you so much, Daniel. I really loved it.
Look, not a problem whatsoever. So, if you're listening out there, and you've liked what you've heard today, please share it with your friends, like, subscribe, and share. That concludes this episode of the Dogs and Deadlifts podcast. I will talk to you soon.